So what was the inspiration behind this documentary?
Well, I guess the inspiration to begin with was just being a wrestling fan, and then originally growing up, and then I kind of came up with an idea to do a documentary about wrestling fans originally, and when I pitched that to who would become the producer of the documentary, they didn't really know too much about wrestling, so they couldn't really grasp the idea of doing a film about wrestling fans and why that would be interesting to anyone. So I kind of went back to the drawing board and kind of came up with this idea of like, oh, okay, well, what if we follow a local wrestling promotion somewhere in Canada for some time and, you know, kind of find the story in the edit room. It was kind of funny the way it happened was so quick once the film actually got picked up by the network here in Canada, Super Channel, and I was able to quit my day job and actually going to be making a feature film full time. We kind of went into production really, really quick. So it was really as we went that we found the story. And of course, as you see in the film, it's kind of the story of their lives. So I just covered their lives. And then, once that year and change ended, you know, we put it all together and that's this wrestling life.
In a way, anything that has to do with professional wrestling is always about the people. It's kind of like the same thing with zombie films. Zombie films necessarily aren't about zombies. They're about the people, you know, around the zombies. The same way, you know, documentaries on professional wrestling aren't really about professional wrestling. They're about the people involved in professional wrestling. So in order for your film to really be a success, you needed a couple of people that audiences could really latch onto and believe in. How lucky do you think you were with the people that you ended up picking?
Oh, well, I couldn't ask for better subjects, and I'm really lucky in a variety of ways, you know, being that I was able to eventually become the cinematographer, so to speak, the camera person as well that filmed the documentary. It basically made it even more intimate for those great subjects, you know, knowing that it was just me behind the camera and it wasn't a huge crew. It was just myself and usually a sound person in the room with them. So they were really able to open up and live their lives honestly and you know, real right in front of our eyes. And we were just able to capture it. So I couldn't ask for better subjects. I mean, each one of them are just like such very personalities and dynamic personalities. You know, Bill Taylor is amazing. Travis, you know, a young kid, 18, of that size, 6'4", 250 at the time the documentary starts. And he, you know, he goes out and wants to capture his dream that he's had since he was 6 years old. Natalie is battling many things, you know, wants to become famous, wants to become a professional wrestler, but has always been in male-dominated industries and roles, you know, kind of to do with the relationship with their father. And then Scotty Mack, who trains all of them, is the closest thing you'll find to a WWE superstar in the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, his struggles of just trying to make it to the WWE. So each person had their own individual story around professional wrestling and indie wrestling, rather than just they were all just trying to become wrestlers or whatnot. You know, you touched on it there, Patrick, that, you know, this isn't just about wrestling, and that's really the way I feel about it. It's about people chasing their dreams and about having a dream and the sacrifices you have to make in order to try and make it, even if it's on like a level not of the WWE, but even to just try and make it in the indies and just go out and work in front of 50 people and do what they do night in, night out. It's difficult, and you're really putting yourself out there. And you know, these four individuals really put themselves out there in the film as well. You see their life as it was in 2008, 2009, you know, in the middle of the recession and everything. And I know it was a lot harder for people in the States than it was maybe in Canada, but there was definitely struggles here too. You know, a lot of them go in and out of having jobs during the film, and it was a difficult time and a great time at the same time for them, because they are working towards their dreams. So it's pretty cool, the subjects that I ended up with. I couldn't ask for more. I mean, you film with a lot of people, and hopefully, you know, something sparks with them, but we got really lucky with our four subjects.
Okay, considering the fact that you were a wrestling fan, I don't know if you still are a wrestling fan, but did you have any preconceived notions before you went into filming? And if so, were they squashed or did they come true?
No. Well, to answer your first question, I was a wrestling fan and I'm still a wrestling fan. I took a break at one point when I first moved to the big city, so to speak, when I moved from – I'm originally from Nova Scotia over on the East Coast. And when I moved to Vancouver, there was a bunch of things that I kind of left behind. And one thing was wrestling, because I thought, like, oh, Vancouver, like, no one's going to be into wrestling. And I was 20 at the time, 1920, so this is like 11 years ago. And a few years ago when I was taking some time off work, I started to get back into wrestling. I was just watching old 80s tapes and the Mega Powers and everything. And I was like, oh my God, I love this. So I got back into wrestling. And then that's when the kind of the idea for the doc happened, for the fan doc. And then eventually this wrestling life happened. And since then I've still followed it. And, no, there was no preconceived notions. I pretty much had a good sense of, because of just, you know, it's an entertainment business at the same time. So it's not going to be that much different than the music industry or the film industry. You know, you have egos, you have, you know, wants and needs. You have people that are trying to be stars. Everybody's an independent contractor, you know, those kind of things. Like all the stuff we hear about, you know, steroids and the death and all that stuff. I didn't think that that was going to be prevalent in the indie scene, or at least out here. And it wasn't, you know, I thought maybe I might see some of that, but there was none of any of that in the locker room. Like, and I didn't really want to go down that road anyways, because so many films do, and that's what they latch onto. And I find people that don't really respect professional wrestling, or don't really understand it, or view it as an art form or whatnot, just as a sideshow, that's kind of the usual route that they'll take, and they'll look at the seediness and this and that. And it's definitely not perfect, and it's not, you know, like, there's lots of health things that you could pick away with every industry or job, but no, there was no really preconceived notions, and there was nothing that really had to be, or that was like stamped out, because the only thing maybe is that I thought some of them would be a little bit harder, or maybe not as nice to me, and maybe kayfabe me a little bit, or just like keep the secrets of the business away from me. But everyone always treated me with the utmost respect, and they never pulled any ribs on me, or my equipment never went missing or anything. And I heard lots of stories about that like other film crews that have come through, their bags would go missing, stuff would be moved, or, you know, people would, you know, try and screw around with them, but they always treated me really well. And I think that was just because they knew that I was a wrestling fan. I understood the psychology of it and what wrestling was about. And I really respected the art form and respected what they do and what they did. So I think that had a lot to do with it, was that I just brought a lot of respect to the locker room. And in turn, they just showed me the same respect. And that's probably why, again, the film is as good and as real as it is the fact that, you know, people just totally let their guard down when I was around with a camera, because, you know, it's just, it's kind of like, hey, there's my buddy Steve with the camera, you know?
Mm-hmm. I've been to a bunch of house shows in the United States, and it's kind of like a grab bag of fans. You get some really intelligent fans, you get some really crazy fans, you get some kind of wacky fans. In some of the footage in the documentary, you know, there's that one guy that I'll never forget. He's like, I hate Scotty Mac. I can't stand him. How are the fans in Canada, the indie wrestling fans in Canada? Are they rabid, or, you know, what's that situation like?
They can be. I mean, I don't think I think they try, and I mean, you even see that, I guess, with TNA fans. Like, a lot of people are trying to rekindle the ECW crowd. And with the chants and with the rabbitness. I mean, it depends. It's kind of like, I guess probably similar in the States or anywhere. It depends on where you go, and regionally, it kind of changes. So in Surrey, where a lot of the film takes place, Surrey, BC, And where his name is Omar, by the way. He's one of the most loved fans of VCCW. He and a lot of other fans in Surrey are very into it and very rabid and really have a great sense of disbelief. The Vancouver crowd here is a little bit different. You know, you get some hipsters, you get, you know, some people with their arms crossed and look like they're not having a good time, but they are. And then some rabid fans and just people that want to chant. And it's an interesting mix. It kind of depends on where they go. Sometimes they're quiet, but for the most part, they have really nice hot crowds, that really want to be there and want to yell, want to scream, want to cheer, want to hate. So it's, ECCW shows are usually pretty fun, as you kind of see in the film. You know, people have a blast and, you know, these guys pull out all the stops and it's definitely not for the money.
There are several scenes in the film that could possibly be a little difficult to digest. It's kind of like when Bill was getting ribbed and, you know, all the wrestlers were kind of, you know, performing moves on him and he was begging to quit. It was kind of hard, you know, to watch. How did you feel filming that scene?
It was hard. It was definitely hard to continue filming and not kind of like put the camera down or say, you know, guys, I think he had enough. But I also knew in the culture of wrestling that I in no way had the right to say that. And that may sound weird, but they do have their own kind of military code and it's their own world. And that is sort of a rite of passage for Bill, so to speak. You know, there's a few more things that I wish that were in the film, which kind of illustrated that a little bit more, but due to time constraints and maybe creative differences, that didn't happen. But I think that's kind of what was happening there, was that it was not only a rite of passage, but also just Bill being in the ring is kind of saying that, you know, while I'm in the ring, you know, I can take bumps and whatnot. And they were kind of like, I think this is kind of what I put behind it after watching it several times and being there and filming it, that they were kind of like, oh, okay. You know, in their mind, you know, oh, you're in the ring and you think you can take bumps. Okay. Well, let's take bumps. And they really, yeah, it's a very difficult scene to watch and it was really difficult to film. And, cause I really, you know, all the subjects, I mean, everybody in ECCW really care about them, and it was just hard to watch Bill go through that, but I knew it was not my place, and then also as a documentary filmmaker, it's not my place to alter, in my opinion, and this is my method, to alter things. That's why, you know, I continually say that this film is real. It's not like reality TV, which is, you know, contrary to belief, it's not reality. It's quite scripted. And, you know, I didn't want to alter it. I mean, you alter reality enough by just putting the camera on somebody, you know, like ultimately they're not being their full selves. And I believe I got as much as them being their true selves as possible. So to alter that moment by, you know, saying, you know, guys, stop or whatever, stop filming. That's just, not my style, and maybe that's a little sadistic. I don't know, but I just feel as a documentary filmmaker that you shouldn't really, you know, alter things too much, let alone what you're already altering because you're putting a camera in front of it. So, and also, I mean, we wouldn't be talking about it right now if I did stop it. So I thought it was important for people to see what Bill went through. And what you kind of have to go through if you're an easy target, if you're someone they're trying to weed out, if you also react to ribbing, because that was one thing that I learned from a lot of shoot interviews and whatnot that I watched in preparation to do the film, was just, you know, if someone does rib you, don't sell it. Because if you give them reason to rib you again, knowing that you're going to react, then, you know, it's just going to be a constant. And that's something that Bill, I think, learned over time. That, and even you kind of see, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, after that scene, what happens, you know, he learns over time, I think, like we all do, that, you know, the less that you give somebody or the less reaction, almost like bullies, right? If someone's bullying you and you don't react, they usually leave you alone. But if you cry or, you know, react in a poor manner, they're probably going to come back for more. So it's kind of, I guess it's kind of like a bear too, right? You're supposed to play dead
yeah.
when a bear comes. So yeah, it was really difficult, but, I felt it was something that needed to be shown. And I guess kind of like a car crash, I couldn't look away.
Over the years, I mean, in the time that I've been a journalist and just articles that I've read about other journalists, I've seen video game critics, you know, go on and end up working in the video game industry. I've seen theater critics give it all up to, like, go into theater and things like that. Did you ever, like, kind of say to yourself, oh, maybe I might want to get in the ring?
Well, it's funny that you say that because now... Now, and I haven't stopped filmmaking, by the way, before anybody judges me, but yeah, I am reffing once in a while for them now. Myself, Bill Taylor, and a couple of other referees that you see throughout the film, Rob Mitchell and a couple other guys are kind of in a rotation of, so once in a while I referee some matches for ECCW, which is really fun because I kind of started out really young in theater as an actor. And so it's kind of my way of performing now as, you know, I'm mostly am a filmmaker and I'm behind the scenes or behind the camera. So it's kind of fun to kind of get out there and in the ring. Like, it's wild because, you know, growing up on wrestling on the East Coast and the WWF in the 80s, I always dreamed in a way, you know, whether it was being in the NHL because I'm Canadian or becoming maybe a, well, I never thought I'd be a wrestler because I'm 5'11". I'm not tall enough, but I thought of being like maybe a manager or an announcer or, I never ever thought that the one thing that I do is be a referee, but it's fun. You know, I kind of, they understand that I really get it. I get the psychology of wrestling and really with little or next to no training other than, you know, all my years of watching wrestling and referees in the ring. You know, now I go in and I do some matches and it's really fun, especially when the crowd's really invested and, you know, it's the one, two, that's pretty cool.
Scotty really opens up to you at several moments in this film. I mean, how gratifying was that to you to see a guy that, I mean, he's kind of on top of this little mountain in a way, and he's the longest reigning NWA Canada heavyweight champion. Just to really, like, break away from kayfabe and, you know, the persona and the gimmick and just give you what you needed to get this done.
Yeah, Scotty's an amazing, amazing guy. You know, what he does with the subjects in the film, how he performs in the ring, how he performs outside of the ring, just an all-around great guy who's really caring. And, yeah, when you strip away the gimmick, when you strip away, you know, the bravado, and everything else, like, this is a really, really kind, nice guy that really cares about people and really wants to see people succeed. And I think that's why he doesn't give up on the subjects and, you know, at every other turn, you know, there's the possibility of them quitting or not wanting to continue or just sour on training. You know, he really tries to push them through. And I mean, since the documentary, there's been, you know, Kyle O'Reilly, who's from ECCW, has gone on to join Ring of Honor. Tenille Taylor is now signed by the WWE to a development deal. Matthias Wild, who's trained by Lance Storm, but wrestled a lot and Scotty booked him out here in ECCW. He's with the WWE. Kenny Lush, another wrestler from ECCW, went on to Korea to become a tag champ. You know, it's just kind of endless, the people that he's kind of been behind and helped. And yeah, he was just always so forthcoming with me. And I think that's just because Scotty and I have a really close relationship and, you know, maybe not the method I'll use in other documentaries where I really, really befriend the subjects to the point where I come very close personal friends with them. Scotty was just able to do that because, again, he was talking to his friend, I think. And it was moments between us, even though the camera was on him, which probably isn't something new. But ultimately, he knew that he could trust me with what he was giving me and what he was doing. And, you know, if he broke down, that I wouldn't make him look like a fool. I would tell his story as it was. And it's some very touching moments in the film. And it's not often that you see a man of that size, that physique, you know, really break down and become vulnerable. And, you know, you see it in this film because it's, you know, it's as real as it gets. It's he was going through a lot at that time, and it's a very emotional part of the film. And I'm just, again, like, very blessed and very lucky that not only did these people really, really open up to me truthfully and intimately, but they allowed me to capture some of the most vulnerable times of that year and a half in their life.
You get some of the other wrestlers in ECCW to talk about why Scotty isn't in TNA or WWE right now. Why do you personally believe he hasn't gotten there yet? Because from looking at him, I mean, the guy is built like a little tank. I mean, he's got that kind of, like, he's bigger than Rob Van Dam as far as, like, his physique goes. You know, he's around, like, the same size as RVD, maybe a little shorter, you know, an inch or two shorter, but he's got that, like, Petey Williams, like, big-ass, you know, cruiserweight build, and he's got a lot of charisma. He throws a wicked super kick. I mean, why do you think he's not in, you know, the big leagues?
I really do believe it's a size thing, and it's a height thing. It's definitely not a muscle or chest or leg size, because, yeah, that guy is just jacked. He is like, in a great physical shape. And has all the tools of the trade. He's a great in-ring worker. He can work the stick like nobody's business. You know, he's got a great look. He's got, like, all the charisma in the world. He's got everything going for him, except that, yeah, he's a little south of what WWE considers to be WWE superstar, unless you're Rey Mysterio or Sin Cara. And TNA, you know, I don't know. I think it's, you know, I think TNA has a lot of its own problems to yeah, kind of sort out. And, you know, I would really love to see Scotty in TNA, for, if anything, for him to get national exposure and a nice paycheck and to be working, you know, on TV. But my God, at the same time, am I glad that he's not, because, well, and this is just my personal opinion. This is not anyone else's opinion but my own. I just, the storyline sometimes, although lately it's been getting better, I would just hate for him to be misused, and not used to his full potential. So, you know, never say never, as they say, and nothing is written in stone. So I'm hoping that he will get another opportunity in the near future to show off his work to TNA or WWE. And I just hope that, you know, if that big break, when it does, or if it comes, you know, he is used properly into his full potential, because, yeah, he's really, you know, one of those people that could be a huge star. And it's just sad that, you know, that maybe WWE has this mandate of 6'2", 240, and he doesn't fit into that. And because he's not under a mask, you know, from Mexico or something, that he might not get his opportunity and his time to shine. And TNA, to me, are just sleeping, you know. Like, they had all those great indie workers try and vie for a contract in the X Division, like, why Scotty Mack wasn't in there, I have no idea, because, he totally deserves it. Great in-ring worker. I mean, go on YouTube, go on ECCW.com, check out his matches, he's a great in-ring worker. And if anyone listening, you know, if you're ever in Canada, on the West Coast, I highly recommend checking him out live, because his promos are just awesome. Like, he plays a really, really great heel, and can get under people's skin in a great way.
Okay, as far as Travis goes, what do you think? What do you think his future looks like? I mean, he made major strides in that year. I mean, in the beginning when he was first taking bumps to where he was at the end, and he had a lot of family problems going on, and he rose above that. What do you think the future holds for him?
Well, the future for Travis is, you know, really, you know, it's up to him and what he wants. And to kind of give you an update where he's at right now, he's actually taken some time off from the business. He's trying to work on his in-ring skills and train a little bit more. Because in time after the documentary, personal issues came up and it started to hamper his work in the ring. And so he's just trying to work on his body right now and really get into some peak physical condition. And then also just kind of clear up any ring rust that he has because he's been off for a little while. But, like anyone, it is what you make it. And he is another person with a lot of skills. And unlike Scotty, he's not fighting that size issue. And that's what sometimes is hopefully motivating for him, but sometimes, can get under some other people's skin in the sense that, sometimes it's hard to get people motivated. And when they have everything already there, you know what I mean? And there's not that much of a struggle for them to go to the next step except a lot of hard work. The hard work is what usually, becomes their barrier or their wall. And, Travis is still really young. And I think that that's part of it too. He's young and he's living life. And, I think it all depends on his focus. And I know right now that there's a few other personal issues and personal things going on that are his main focus rather than wrestling. But, for his future in wrestling, if he really wants it, he could really go places. It's just a matter of, kind of like in the film, getting in the gym, getting in the ring, getting as much ring time as you can, and just really perfecting that character, like Macho Man Randy Savage wasn't made overnight. He did that character for, I believe, upwards of 5 years before joining the WWF and honed it and refined that character. And that's the thing. You really have to work on yourself and what you want to do in that business or any business for that matter, any career, any craft. You really have to hone it and work at it. I spent 10 years before making this film, practicing filmmaking and my craft and making music videos, making short films, doing tons of stuff for free. And, it's the same with every industry. It is what you make it. And especially if you have all the tools and all the skills, there should be no holding you back except for yourself. And at times with Travis, I think that's what happens. And you kind of see it in the film. He kind of holds himself back and has some confidence issues at times. So, we're all there trying to motivate him and trying to help him, kind of get over any stumbling blocks. But right now, yeah, Travis, it's kind of up to him where he wants to go. But first thing I think is probably getting back in that ring and getting in that gym again, since he's taken some time off to handle some personal issues.
How would you describe the dichotomy of the promotion? At times it feels like a family, but at other times it kind of feels cult-esque in a way where you have when the 50-50 girl, when she gets fired and she gets home, sent home, and she's crying, but she's not really upset. She's saying something along the lines of, "Wow, now I don't get to be a part of this great thing," And it's just like it seems like some of their mindsets aren't, they're not as on point as you would like them to be. Like maybe they're marking out for themselves, I guess. What do you feel of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of that. I think when you're young and you're starting out in performance-based business, an entertainment business where people, kind of cheer for you and you kind of have fans and you could sign autographs. And I think there's a bit of that. I mean, in reality, I think most wrestlers, entertainers in general, really, musicians, most people are marks for themselves. To a point. But yeah, I think with Natalie in the moment you're talking about there, she just really wanted to be part of ECCW, and a lot of people outside of ECCW, maybe that's, I don't want to say that's all they have, but, maybe for their ego, and for being appreciated to that level, because even though it's 50 people or 250 people, they're still hearing a roar of a crowd that's either cheering you on or booing you, but one way or the other, hopefully they're reacting the way you want them to react. And, you know, you've heard about this and seen it time and time again, and I mean, even that's kind of like one of the themes of The Wrestler, is walking away from that and realizing that it is a work and it is a show, and yeah, not necessarily believing all of it and believing that those people are cheering for me, you know, like they're cheering for your character. But I think that when you're early on in the business, there's still a lot of times where you will mark out for yourself or mark out for the business. And, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of the people that are involved in wrestling, especially indie wrestling, are wrestling fans. You know, like you won't go two steps in the ECCW locker room without hearing someone referencing something from the WWE or WWF, or maybe talking about a show or someone doing an impression of Howard Finkel, or, you know what I mean? Like, they're all wrestling fans. So I think that's the thing. It's like, once you've always been a wrestling fan and then now you're involved in the wrestling industry, even if it's just on the indies, where, you know, it's a little bit of a smaller house and a smaller show and whatnot, you're still a part of the show. And it's probably really easy to get caught up in that, you know, now I may not be a part of the show. And I think that was a thing for Natalie, because she really cared a lot about being a part of it, really wanted to be a part of it. And, you know, outside of ECCW, a lot of them, I don't want to say that they don't have anything going on in their lives, but it's a big part of their lives. And to have that taken away from you, or to have your dream taken away from you, that's, you know, that would be very upsetting for anyone, I think. Like, if someone said tomorrow, like, you know what, reviewfix.com, done. So it's over. You're not allowed to come back and write anymore. You'd probably be hung up a little bit, and maybe it's not because you're a mark for your writing or whatnot, but you know what I mean? You really love it and you want to do it. That's why you're doing it. You know, especially wrestling, like, you're going in and hurting yourself from people paying to watch you get hurt. And it's not like they're walking away with tons of money, at the end of an indie show. I mean, your first year in wrestling, you don't even get paid, at all. So you're going out there to hurt yourself for free. And all you have is maybe the people cheering you on and what's happening inside you. So, you know, I think that when you come with that mindset, you can kind of realize why it would be so upsetting for someone to not be allowed around that locker room again, or to be shunned out of it. So it's interesting. It's like some people, like, later on, I think if you're like 15 years into your career and, you know, yeah, you're a giant mark for yourself, yeah, maybe then there might be some issues. But earlier on in the business, I think people, they just take it very seriously and they really want to be around it.
You said earlier that, you know, you've been working in film for 10 years and you've been doing all these other things. Where do you want this film to stand in your larger body of work? What do you want the legacy to be for this film?
Wow. Wasn't ready for that question. but that's a really good one. It's a really good question. I guess I want people to kind of walk away. Well, I guess I always wanted people to walk away from the film feeling like they wanted to do something with their life. Whether it's go and, you know, man, like that was really inspiring, and now I'm going to go clean the dishes. Or go and write a paper or a thesis or something. Like, whatever it was, as long as they kind of walked away from it, you know what, like, there's this thing that I've always wanted to do, and that guy could get in a wrestling ring. Well, I could get on a motorbike, or I could do this, or I could do that. And as for my larger body of work, I'd like it to be remembered as my first feature, and I hope a good one, and a good story, and a human story, you know, that you can relate to. And that's the thing. I don't think you need to be into wrestling to really relate with this film. And I've heard actually from largely a female audience, that they really, really enjoy the film because of that, that, like, they can still relate to it because, you know, ultimately it's a human story, a human interest story of people chasing their dreams. And, yeah, I just like it to be kind of the, maybe looked upon as, like, the start of a strong career where I do other films that look at other parts of subcultures or other interesting people and movements and make those as well. But I guess that's a question that maybe later on down the road I might be able to give a better answer to. But I guess it's still kind of early in my career to kind of comment on where it should be. I just hope that it's definitely not the last one. And people just really enjoy it for what it is and that it's a story of a chasing your dreams, and I hope people go out and chase some dreams after watching it, whether you know it's something small or something big.
Okay, let's give you a hypothetical. Let's just say someone's bouncing around iTunes and they come across This Wrestling Life and they're kind of on the fence. Should I download this? Should I not download this? How would you sell this in a sentence or two to them?
Well, I would say if you really like a documentary that has very, very interesting subjects that are very dynamic and different from each other, that you see an arc of their entire life in the span of a year and a half, if you're into combat sports at all or just entertaining in general, and being able to see someone learn a craft and then go and practice it and fail and succeed and fail and just try and capture a dream, you'll really enjoy This Wrestling Life because it's a very real documentary. Their lives tell the story. And if you're really interested in people, first of all, if you're really interested in wrestling, or if you're just really interested in a solid documentary with dynamic subjects that have very interesting lives, I think you really like This Wrestling Life, and you should check it out.
Is there anything else that you're working on right now or in the future that you'd like to share with us?
Sure, yeah. I just finished up a music video for a great hip-hop group based out of Vancouver. They're called Friends with the Help. And you can go to friendswiththehelp.com and download their mixtape for free. It's a really awesome mixtape. If you really like old school kind of hip hop where it's heavy on the beats and really good dynamic rhymes, you'll really, really enjoy it. It's got a lot of great summer tracks on it. And I just finished the first video off that album. It's called East Van Shit. And you can check that out at youtube.com/stoop. Fam. That's STOOPFAM, one word. And I'm going to do another video for them. I have another documentary in the works right now that I'm waiting to be allowed to talk about. We're just hopefully getting another network on board with that and developing a couple other things. I met with some people last night about some more music videos. So if you follow me at Twitter, at Stephen Gillis, and that's with a PH, or check out my production company, Random Pictures, on Facebook, facebook.com/randompictures. And we're on Twitter at Random Pictures. You'll be able to check out all our stuff. We're going to have some more music videos coming up in the near future, more information on that other doc. And, of course, This Wrestling Life is on Facebook and Twitter at TWL The Movie. And, follow us on all those different accounts. And I'm kind of on there all the time, so I'll let you know what's going on. And if you're into t-shirts too, I've actually launched a t-shirt company, inviteonly.ca. And it's, we're still building up some more designs, but it's a limited edition, t-shirt company that is artist driven. So we find wicked artists and put them on, limited edition t-shirts and just trying to do all kinds of stuff. I never kind of stop, finding different avenues to feel creatively fulfilled. So, check out all those sites. And if any of you go to thiswrestlinglife.com, check out the outtakes, check out the trailer. And, I hope you can check it out on iTunes in the States. If you're listening in Canada, superchannel.ca, check out Showtimes for This Wrestling Life. That's the network in Canada it's on. And, I just really appreciate the time, Patrick, and the support. And, yeah, if you really like documentaries, you really love wrestling, or if you just really love a good story about a human interest story about four really interesting individuals, yeah, check it out. ThisWrestlingLife.com and This Wrestling Life on iTunes.